All right, welcome back. Crossover NBA podcast. On this episode, we have a free agency recap from the changes in Los Angeles with the Lakers retooling. Why is it the Clippers didn't want to bring Montrezl Harrell back? Gordon Hayward has a monster contract with the Charlotte Hornets. We talk about that. Plus, John Wall wants out in Washington, we think. I dive into all that and much more with Jeff Zilgit, senior NBA writer over at USA Today. If you like this podcast, easy way to support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. All right, on to the show.
They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
If you have a problem with it, build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, Jeff Zilgit is here, senior NBA writer over at USA Today. And my first question for Jeff Zilgit today is, Jeff, have you been given a max contract that you know about at this point?
I'm trying to. My agent's working on it. And hopefully that my agent will release that information to the masses.
The run of max contracts has been fast with De'Aaron Fox, leading to Donovan Mitchell, leading to Jason Tatum, leading to Bam Adebayo, leading to Brandon Ingram. But, I mean, to me, Jeff, none of these contracts were all that surprising, right? Like, these were, for the most part, slam dunk kind of contracts, to, if you'll forgive the pun.
No, they are. And look, I wrote the other night, and I think it's applicable to all of the cases, is that both the player and the team were doing best both for themselves and the future, and their security. And that works a couple different ways. There's financial security. There's team security. It's guys, by and large, for the most part, De'Aaron Fox may be the exception, but going back to winning situations where there's expectations that they're going to go deep into the playoffs, and they are vital contributors on those teams. When you look at Adebayo and what he did to help Miami get to the finals. And then when you look at Donovan Mitchell, I know it's a first-round loss, but circumstances are different. They had a 3-1 lead. They don't lose that series if it's the normal seven-game series going back and forth between cities and they're not in the bubble. And then Jason Tatum, the Celtics have played in the finals, three of the past four seasons. And not only what he did in the regular season, but what he did in the bubble is fantastic. And then if I'm looking at all those guys except De'Aaron Fox, they all made the All-Star team last year. And Jason Tatum was third team and all NBA. And so you add all those things up, it made a lot of sense for both parties to get this done and move forward and not have to worry about it, especially for the guys who are headed into restricted free agency potentially a year from now.
Yeah, I agree. There really isn't much to quarrel with when it comes to these contracts. And from the player's side, I've said this before, but no player in the history of these rookie extensions has ever turned it down, largely because it's basically money you can't get back. If you ever sign the qualifying offer, that's cash. But the difference between the qualifying offer and the first year of your rookie extension, that's money you'll never get back.
Yes.
These contracts are always accepted, pretty pro forma when it comes to guys on this level, and none of these deals is really all that surprising or all that unearned, you know, frankly. I mean, you can... You know, Ingram was the comeback player of the year. The most improved player this year. Fox is clearly a star in the rise, so no issue with those contracts whatsoever. All right, let's talk about free agency, Jeff, and let's drill down on a few specific scenarios, because I don't know that the balance of power shifted all that dramatically in this free agency. I think some of the top teams made some interesting moves, and you saw some improvements here and there, but I want to drill down on a couple. Let's go out to Los Angeles first and start with the Lakers. The Lakers effectively began free agency before free agency when they made the deal to acquire Dennis Schroeder, who was coming off a high-level season in Oklahoma City. They stunned everybody and signed Montrezl Harrell to a 2-year deal. They signed Marc Gasol to a 2-year deal. they say goodbye to a couple of guys, Rajon Rondo, Avery Bradley, as we mentioned, Danny Green traded in that Schroeder deal. Dwight Howard is now a Philadelphia 76er. So when you look at the changes the Lakers made, did the Lakers get better?
I think they did. I think they got better, certainly offensively. When you swap out Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee for Mark Gasol and Montrezl Harrell, I think you're better offensively. Now you can make some arguments defensively. On the perimeter, though, they keep KCP. And I know losing Danny Green stings a little bit when it comes to that. But they also get Wesley Matthews in the deal. And this sort of stunned me the other day, Chris, when I was looking. Wesley Matthews, if he hits 100 three-pointers this coming season, he's going to be close to the top 20 in all-time three-pointers made in the NBA. That sort of took me by surprise. I know we're living in the three-point era, but you're talking about the 3-and-D guy that, you know, people have raved about and wanted. And so I think the Lakers get better offensively. I don't think they get worse overall. And then when it comes to the playoffs, I know people are going to talk about not having a rim protector. Well, there were times in the playoffs, obviously, where they wanted Dwight on the court. But there were also a lot of times in the bubble where I know it's Lakers small ball, but it was still a pretty big lineup when you're throwing LeBron out there with KCP, Anthony Davis, Rajon Rondo. I know he's not there, but you're going to have Wesley Matthews out there. You're going to have Dennis Schroeder out there. And so I don't think they got much worse defensively. And when it comes down to it, playoff team, Frank Vogel, obviously, Chris, knows how to fine-tune that defense when it comes to that time of year. And so I'm not too worried about the Lakers. They're still going to be the favorite to me getting back to the finals.
And look, Marc Gasol can be that rim protector for them. He's a few years removed from his defensive player of the year type performances, but he still is a quality starter in this league who's just a year plus removed from being a starter on a championship team, you know, on the Toronto Raptors. So I think he's a huge pickup. The Harrell pickup is interesting. He's obviously a prolific scorer. He can rebound the basketball. I'm not quite sure, Jeff, how he fits in alongside Anthony Davis. We know AD likes to play for most of the game, opposite a traditional big man, whether it was JaVale McGee or Dwight Howard last year to save himself the wear and tear. Harrell's not that guy. He's, you know, what, like 6'8", 6'9". He'll play some center and will probably play most center, but I'm a little curious how that works. I'm also curious, Jeff, about why the Clippers didn't pursue Harrell. I mean, Harrell had a conference call with local reporters where he basically admitted that there wasn't much interest from the Clippers side. We're talking about in his prime, sixth man of the year. I mean, a guy that put up numbers. And all I could think of, Jeff, was did they watch him underperform in the bubble and that gave them pause for offering him a contract? Or, I mean, the Clippers had some chemistry issues all year long.
Yes.
And, you know, did they scapegoat Montrezl Harrell as a potential cause of those chemistry issues? Those are the two things that jumped to mind when I saw the Lakers make that deal. What did you think of the fact that the Clippers didn't go all out or really anything in pursuit of Montrezl Harrell?
Yeah, and at the price that the Lakers got him at, you know, the Clippers could have easily given him that, if not a little bit more. And so, Chris, I'm not going to come at this with anything I know or reported, but certainly things I've read and observed. And if you're going to scapegoat someone who was unhappy with the way things went last year with the Clippers, you're not going to scapegoat Paul George, and you're not going to scapegoat Kawhi Leonard. And so someone else is going to have to be on the outs. And look, all the things that were reported, you know, the team did take on a different personality when you added Paul George and Kawhi Leonard compared to that 2018-19 season. And, you know, there was a little bit of the dog that Clippers team had may have been lost a little bit. And then you talk about the bubble performance. I think there's two things part and parcel with it is his lack of games played in the bubble. And I know he was dealing with family stuff, and so I'm not going to criticize him for that, but also his actual performance inside the bubble as well. And I think, you know, we're hitting on things when you start to add it all up and what's going to be best for that locker room. Maybe it made sense for the Clippers in the big picture to not bring back Montrezl Harrell, even though he puts up fantastic numbers. He comes off the bench and does his job. Maybe it was best for the franchise moving forward, especially with the new coach. I know Ty Lue was there as an assistant coach, but now he's the head coach, and you know he's going to have to mold that team in a similar way that when he took over for David Blatt in Cleveland and managed some egos. And given his track record as both player and coach, it looks like he should be able to do that. And losing Montrezl Harrell may have been part of the cost of that.
Well, the reason I feel like they're scapegoating him is they let Harrell walk to the Lakers for what is the equivalent of that mid-level exception, the $9-plus million dollars per year. And then they turn around and sign Marcus Morris for $64 million over 4 years. Now, look, I like Marcus Morris, and I'm happy for him that he got the payday he's been chasing since he left Boston. But is Marcus Morris worth four over 64 and Harrell worth two over 20? I mean, that seems – I mean, I look at Markieff, who got the veterans minimum from the Lakers to go back there. Right. I mean, that – there are a lot – we'll talk about some weird contracts, but what did you think of the Marcus Morris contract, especially in context for the other moves the Clippers made?
Yeah, and that may be one. So, look, you're talking about the scapegoat issue, but then what other person on the market sort of fit that Marcus Morris bill? And so maybe the cost of doing business was a little elevated for the Clippers when it came to that particular deal. The other thing, and I don't know this yet, but I would like to know what other offers for Montrezl Harrell were out there. You know, could he have gotten, you know, 4 and 50 from another team, or, you know, in that 4 and 48 range from another team? And is it a similar situation? And I know we're going to bring Rich Paul and Clutch Sports into this, but Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, real quick, Chris, for the last few seasons had been playing on, you know, look, he was getting paid, but they were on team-friendly deals for the most part. And then Kentavious Caldwell-Pope got paid this summer. And I think if you add in the 5 years total what he got paid, now you're talking about a 5-year, $68 million deal. Maybe that big deal is coming for Montrezl Harrell in a couple of seasons as well, when the Lakers are able to swing that kind of deal. But you're certainly making some good points when you look at the Marcus Morris deal and what he got paid, especially in relation to some of the shooters that are out there. And I thought you made a very poignant tweet about what shooters are going for on the market. And, you know, you get a defender, you get a guy who can shoot, and maybe they're looking at Marcus Morris in a similar vein.
Yeah, I'm buying stock right now in Duncan Robinson. I'll tell you that much.
He's
probably $100 million guy next summer. You know, no exaggeration. But you know, to put a button on the Clippers, you do have to look. And look, if Harrell gets that kind of, you know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope deal with the Lakers, where it's short term, big deal, great. It is a risk, of course, because the Lakers might decide to go, you know, in a different direction, trying to clear cap space next summer, and you never know what can happen. In that respect, you do have to look at the Clippers side of it, though, with Serge Ibaka in mind, because Serge Ibaka effectively replaces Montrezl Harrell. And clearly there was a thinking within the Clippers that Ibaka, who is probably a better outside shooter than Montrezl Harrell, is a better fit. Plus, again, when you look at chemistry, locker room stuff, Serge Ibaka is very close with Kawhi Leonard. There is a relationship there that dates back to their days in Toronto, and they were good friends in that Raptors locker room. So you have to wonder if the Clippers just decided, look, we can get Ibaka at X. Maybe he's not the offensive force that Harrell is. Maybe he's not the same player he once was, but he's the right role player for this situation. Maybe they decided the role was more important than the player.
And Chris, I think that holds true for a lot. Now, look, we all know, and watching the Lakers through the season and in the bubble, what kind of, you know, that was a team that got along really, really well. And that manifested itself in some, you know, productive ways, certainly on the court when they get along so well off the court. And maybe that's the situation the Clippers are hoping for. And, you know, you mentioned the friendship with Kawhi Leonard. Serge Ibaka has figured out you know, how to be a team player in this league, and he knows his role and really doesn't step outside the role. And I think that's going to help the Clippers in a certain way as well. And the Clippers may end up, you know, when you talk about playing a somewhat normal regular season, you know, they still may be up there as the number two team in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I agree. Ibaka's been successful on winning teams as a role player, whether it's in Oklahoma City or Toronto.
Yep.
He's proven it, and he'll get another chance to do it in L.A. All right, let's talk about the Gordon Hayward situation. Hayward opts out of the last year of his deal, leaves $34.2 million on the table. It wasn't shocking, Jeff, because we've seen it a lot where a guy will opt out of a big number on a one-year deal in favor of getting more money over a long-term deal. Richard Jefferson comes to mind as a somewhat recent example of someone that did that. So I was kind of expecting someone to sign Gordon Hayward to like a three-year, $60 million contract, maybe $70 million. Might have been Boston. I know the Celtics did want him back. After the last few years have been so tumultuous for Hayward. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that someone would step up with a four-year, $120 million contract. Take a bow, Michael Jordan. You have handed out what I think is the most bonkers contract of the offseason, where you give a 30-year-old Gordon Hayward a four-year, $120 million deal. And on top of that, as we record this, there has not been any kind of sign and trade with Boston. Right. So let's operate, Jeff, under the assumption that they do what Rick Bonnell down in Charlotte reported, which is wave and stretch Nicholas Batum, making Gordon Hayward over the next 3 years basically a $39 million per year player. That is wild. Really wild to me,
Jeff. It is. And you know what? It's funny too, Chris, because when you talk about the waving and stretching of Batum, if that's how it goes down, Batum was one of the egregious contracts way back in 2016, as it was when all that money was being thrown around. And so here's how I feel about this situation. And I know this is not, if you're in a mid-market, small market, or smaller revenue producing team, however the NBA likes to phrase it, I'm sure I'll get a call from someone who says that, you know, they're not small market. But when you're in that kind of market as Charlotte, I talk about the cost of doing business. Sometimes overpaying is the cost of doing business. If you're Charlotte and you want that kind of name, or maybe that kind of player and that kind of name. And that's how I look at a portion of that. I was surprised because I didn't think he was going to come close to $30 million a year either. I wouldn't even have been surprised if some teams were going to offer maybe even four in close to the $100 million range, which is still, you know, $25 a year. I was really surprised it went up to the $120 mark. And again, that's what Charlotte has to do. And I'm also not surprised, Chris, and you know the situation well, is – even though there's that close relationship between Gordon Hayward and Brad Stevens, the coach of the Celtics, that it was starting to become apparent with the growth of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, with Marcus Smart, the way he played, especially in the bubble, and then Kemba Walker, is that Gordon Hayward was starting to have a reduced role one way or another with that Celtics team, and maybe a change of scenery is best for him. You talked about sort of the tumultuous situation with injuries. And so I'm looking at that as it maybe was best for all parties that he decided to do that, even though you mentioned that the Celtics had some interest in bringing him back. I'm not sure that the Celtics are going to be demonstrably worse without Gordon Hayward next season.
Yeah, I'm not so sure, because last season when he was healthy, he was pretty effective. He once again had the entire year interrupted in spurts, the beginning of the year with the broken hand, the end of the year in the bubble with the ankle injury that derailed him. But when he was healthy, he was pretty good for that team. So we'll see. We'll see how Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown improve will probably answer that question for us. With Charlotte, though, I get that for the Hornets have to overpay for guys. I get that. That being said, it's one thing to overpay for a guy when you're on the cusp of doing something. It's another thing to overpay when you're not doing anything. And right now, the Hornets are in like phase one of a rebuild. I thought they did well in the draft, drafting LaMelo Ball. I think LaMelo Ball is probably going to be a really good player. He's at least brings some star power to Charlotte, which is something they have sorely lacked for generations, it seems like. But is 20-year-old LaMelo Ball, I mean, is it really worth $30 million per year to bring in 30-year-old Gordon Hayward for him to pass to? Like, are you really, what are you gaining with Gordon Hayward in this mix? Are you going to go from 12th in the Eastern Conference to 10th? Do you, I just don't know what the upside is in this situation.
And you know, Chris, even more interesting too, I could almost understand it if you were trying to put fans in the seats in Charlotte. We're not going to have many fans in the seats for a majority of this season. And so that one you sort of throw off the table as well. No, I'm with you. The timelines don't add up. And so it does seem to be an odd signing. There's no doubt about that.
I mean, good for Gordon Hayward and his agent, Mark Bartlestein. You guys won the offseason. The other aspect of this, Jeff, is did Boston overplay its hand? There were a lot of reports in the hours leading up to Gordon Hayward signing that the Celtics and the Pacers were discussing a sign and trade. You know, Gary Washburn over at the Boston Globe, he suggests that the Pacers were willing to throw in Miles Turner. The Celtics wanted a Miles Turner plus package, whether it's Miles Turner and TJ Warren or Miles Turner and Victor Oladipo. That Celtics package seemed highly unlikely to be something the Pacers would go for. I mean, TJ Warren is coming off a monster performance in the bubble.
Yep.
And Victor Oladipo, for all his injury issues last year, is still an all-star level player. You don't give up two players of that caliber to get a player that to get a player like Gordon Hayward, frankly. So the Celtics, you know, they didn't walk away with nothing because they do have Tristan Thompson now. They do have Jeff Teague. But I can see, Jeff, how Miles Turner would look good in a Celtics uniform. I mean, the guy is a three-point shooting, mobile, shot-blocking big man. He's not perfect. You know, he's been called soft before. You know, there are some questions about, you know, positional fit. But something tells me Brad Stevens could do well with a versatile big man who can shoot a three-pointer. I wonder if we'll look back on this in a year and wonder if the Celtics overplayed their hand, because Miles Turner, in addition to all the things I said, he's got a reasonable contract by NBA standards anyway, $18 million per year over the next three. What do you think of that? Do you think there's a chance the Celtics overplayed their hands here?
I don't know. I don't think so, Chris. I'm taking a slightly different tact on it because I wasn't all that enamored with the whole idea of only getting Miles Turner back in the deal. I understand everything you just said, but the Celtics certainly just made a hardline decision that's what they were looking for, and if it meant losing Gordon Hayward elsewhere without getting anything returned, I don't mind them trying to get a little bit more and it not working out for them. And again, I'm hearing all your points and what you're saying about Miles Turner, but that's something maybe Danny Ainge and his staff, I'm not saying you're going to go out and find another Miles Turner, but maybe you can replicate that production with a couple different players here and there. And whether it ends up being some kind of combination of Daniel Tice and looking down the bench and seeing what happens from that point. I just wasn't sure that, you know, look, Indiana, if you really wanted Gordon Hayward, I think you had to force them to really make you pay for it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that when you come down to it, the Pacers weren't willing to give up that much. And so that sort of indicates how much that they really wanted Gordon Hayward. And so I'm fine with the Celtics doing what they did. Now, you could be ultimately correct. They may regret not having that kind of player, especially when we get into the playoffs. But, you know, I think Danny Ainge and his staff are more than willing to let that ride and see if they can't come up with that kind of a similar player through the course of using a couple different players and seeing what they can do at the trade deadline.
Yeah, and they did get Tristan Thompson, which is exactly what they need on that front line. They've got Tice, the more athletic you know, perimeter shooting, floor spacing kind of guy. You got Robert Williams, who is athletic, yes, shot block. They didn't have the physical rebounding tough guy, and that's what Tristan Thompson is. He brings championship experience to that team, which I think will be a valuable addition. And Jeff Teague is fine. He's not a starter anymore, but you're not asking him to be. He's basically Kemba Walker insurance down there in case Kemba needs to take time off with that knee injury. So it wasn't a failure of an offseason for Boston. I wonder how we look at this fall, when we look back a couple of years later. All right, let me look down south for a minute here with the Houston Rockets. And I don't really understand some of the moves the Rockets made, Jeff, where you go out and you sign Christian Wood. Christian Wood, it's not an awful contract, but you're basically rewarding Christian Wood for putting up numbers 1 year on an awful team. Like, the Pistons were bad last year. Christian Wood put up numbers after the Drummond trade. Maybe he can. He's a ball handling, floor spacing big man, modern type of big. I get all that, but I wasn't particularly high on him. And frankly, to do that deal, you had to complete the Trevor Ariza trade. And I might have held on to Trevor Ariza, not because I like Trevor Ariza, but because Trevor Ariza and that expiring contract could have been an interesting trade ship, you know, down the line. You could have given it to a team looking to cut into they're looking to create more cap flexibility in the summer of 2021. They also had to give up a first-round pick to get Trevor Ariza off their books, which I didn't think much of as well. They top it all off, Jeff, the cherry on top, by signing DeMarcus Cousins. And we're bringing Cousins into this mix right now. I mean, what do you make of what's going on in Houston at the moment?
Well, it's a team I don't want to necessarily in disarray, but it's certainly a team in flux that needs to figure some things out. It has not been a good offseason. When you talk about losing Mike D'Antoni basically on the way home from the bubble, shortly thereafter you lose Daryl Morey, who then shortly thereafter takes another job with the Philadelphia 76ers. And then, by all accounts, you have a couple players who are not exactly thrilled with the direction of the team when you're talking about James Harden and Russell Westbrook. And so they have issues to resolve. And ultimately, Chris, this just might be the beginning of the end for what this Rockets team was for the past 6-7 years with James Harden, and then the past couple or few with Russell Westbrook on the team. This is about it for the Rockets. I think they're going to look to rebuild one way or another, and that's why you saw some of those deals. Now, it's not going to be easy. You know that the Westbrook contract is difficult to move, and you and I both know that even when a contract looks unmovable, a team can find a place for it. And then ultimately, you're going to be able to get something for James Harden if and when you go that direction. And so, again, there's a little bit of disarray. I go back to that, but I think it's more of a team in flux. It's trying to figure out where they want to go, and it's not looking like a team that is shooting for the championship anymore, as they were with Daryl Morey, Mike D'Antoni, and what they were trying to do. It looks like a team that's probably headed in the other direction.
Well, you trade Robert Covington and you get back some draft capital. That suggests that you're going into or preparing for a rebuild. You sign Christian Wood, and I understand that Wood is, like, he's tall. I wouldn't call him a traditional five by any stretch, but you needed a big body. That suggests, though, at his age, 25, that you're looking towards the future. Then you bring in DeMarcus Cousins, and that suggests you're trying to win now. You're trying to tap into whatever it is that Cousins has left. So I just don't know exactly what direction they're leaning, and they're throwing it all on the lap of a first-year head coach. And look, I have been driving the Stephen Silas train for the better part of the last 3 years as far as him getting an opportunity. But this, Jeff, is a really tough opportunity for him to walk into. I mean, I don't know what that training camp's going to look like, you know, what that locker room feels like. There's a lot of combustibility in Houston right now.
And on top of it, I know that the GM now in charge was there with Daryl, but, you know, it's still not the same as having Daryl Morey there in your front office. And he very well may be a great person for the job ultimately, but he is certainly dealing with a little bit of a firestorm and trying to navigate, you know, a pretty combustible situation right there. And, you know, look, you're pointing out all the right things in terms of not knowing exactly which direction they're going. But, you know, when I look at DeMarcus Cousins, well, that's just going to be a short-term deal. Nothing to have to worry about long-term. And so maybe it's just worth it for them to maybe see what this looks like at the beginning of the season and then start being able to assess it and make some moves and go from there.
All right, let me finish in your backyard, Jeff, down in D.C. And, you know, in the middle of the free agent signing spree, you've got the report that John Wall wants to be traded, kind of out of nowhere with this report. John Wall hasn't really played for almost 2 years while overcoming significant injuries, most notably the Achilles tear that got him a year or so back. He has been recovering, rehabbing, seems like he's ready to go for next season. Now we get the report that he wants to be traded. Tommy Shepard, the GM in Washington, he was on a conference call with reporters. He said there are no plans to trade John Wall. At his community event on Tuesday, John Wall offered no comment when he's asked about a request to be traded, which, you know, speaks volumes, Jeff. I mean, if you don't want to be traded, you say, I don't want to be traded or something to that effect. You don't,
yeah,
no comment the situation. What's your read on what's going on in Washington? Because let's not forget, John Wall has a tough contract. He is almost, if not more tough to move than Russell Westbrook is. So, you know, John Wall may want out. I have a hard time seeing, you know, where he's going to go.
So I think Tommy Shepard is saying the right things publicly. But the bottom line that you're getting to and reinforcing is that because John Wall hasn't played in 2 years, that there's no team that's going to take him in a deal without seeing actually how he is on the court right now. And then on top of the contract that you're mentioning. And so John Wall may very well want out. There's lots of things going on behind the scenes about, you know, whether John is unhappy about the way Tommy Shepard characterized the Wizards as now Bradley Beal's team and maybe tried to smooth it over by, you know, saying that, hey, look, John hasn't played for a couple of years. Brad has. It is Brad's team. Those two got to figure it out. The other thing you need to remember when you're looking at this Wizards situation is even when Brad and John were healthy together, Chris, they were no better than a second-round playoff team, and the roster isn't as good right now. I know they bring back Bertans, and again, going back to your line about paying a premium for guys who can knock down three-pointers and everything, it's just not a situation where, that you're looking at and saying that this is John Wall and Brad Beal completely in their healthy primes. And so when I get to the bottom of it, Tommy Shepard, I believe, said the right things. John's no comment, you know, spoke volumes. But no team is trading for him now. And so Tommy's best bet is to be able to get a healthy John Wall on the court and show that he can play basketball again at a high level and then look to move him at that point. And maybe the Westbrook for Wall deal ends up being the one that happens. It makes the most sense when you're looking at some of the contract stuff. But it's certainly going to be difficult to move him. And this may be something that John Wall and his representation, Rich Paul of Clutch Sports, have to work out. You certainly don't want an unhappy John Wall either, because that's not going to be a strong signal to other teams as well. And so you're going to have to get John in there at his best and put him on the court and showcase him.
Yeah, I can see Tommy's comments getting under John's skin about it being Brad's team, because I've talked to John a little bit in the last couple of days and weeks. Everything gets under his skin. You know, everybody criticizing, you know, his ability to come back from this, and even before then, not ranking him among the point guard elite. I mean, he hears all this stuff. He reads all this stuff. So I can see all that getting to him. But I don't know what, like you mentioned Westbrook for Wall. Like, how does that help Houston? Like, is it like, here, James, here's your third running buddy in 3 years? Like, I don't know how that makes Houston measurably better, unless Harden absolutely wants nothing to do with Westbrook. But then, like, are Harden and Westbrook, or Wall and Westbrook, that much different? I mean, maybe they're a little bit different. I don't think they're there's an enormous gap between how they play. I just don't know what that does for Houston.
No, and I don't either. And that might just be a change of scenery thing for both guys. And if, you know, Houston, you know, doesn't want Russ anymore, or they don't think it's going to work with Russ and Harden, it might just be change for change's sake. And, you know, real quick, Chris, I'm hoping one day that John will let me share it. But, you know, to your point about how he reads everything and sees everything, remember a few seasons back before the injury bug started happening, he had the bone spur. That, and he was paying attention. You remember all the stories that were, you know, John Wall isn't as fast. He's not covering as much ground. You know, he's slowing down, not covering as many miles. Well, I had seen a picture of the bone spur that was pressing up against his heel, Chris. It was a nice chunk of bone spur. And I'm not sure that you or I and anyone else who doesn't play in the NBA would be getting up and down the court, let alone walking. Very far with that kind of bone spur. And so I know some of that stuff does bother John. I'm hoping that he can sort it out, but they're going to need him to get into camp. And if he really wants out, he's going to have to go there, put on a happy face, and perform for that to happen.
Yeah, massive injury issues for John Wall over the last couple of years. And maybe this last injury, in a way, is a blessing in disguise because it allows him to get over everything else. And get back to being the player he once was. Jeff, always appreciate your time, man. Great to talk to you. And I guess I'd say I'd see you at the opener, but God knows what the hell we're going to be doing for these NBA games as far as covering them. So I'll see you when I see you, Jeff.
Unfortunately, Chris, I'll see you on a Zoom call.
Well, wave hello by pressing the wave hello button, Jeff.
That's right. All right, Chris.